Counsel, this is the case of Kauk versus Kauk. Mr. Urich, good morning to you. And Mr. McDermott, good morning to you. Do either counsel have any questions before you begin? With that, Mr. Urich, you may approach and you may proceed. And please, when you are presenting to the court, take your mask off so that we can see and hear what you have to say.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Mark Urich. I'm from the firm of Urich and Peterson, and I represent the appellant, Marsha Kauk. I wish to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. Today, I will try to address 3 assignments of error, abuse of discretion by the district court in awarding the acreage with the home to Randy. I will refer to the defendant, Appalee, as Randy and Marsha by their first names. The second issue is the abuse by classifying certain debts as marital debts. And finally, abuse in failing to classify as a marital asset payments which were made by Randy for the purchase of a quarter owned by his Kauk Family LLC, an entity in which he's a member. My client, Marsha, is a kindergarten school teacher and has been for 32 years. She's lived on this acreage for that time period. Prior to that, she was a country girl. She lived with her parents, and they grew up on a farm near Loup City. Mr. Kauk was and still is a family farmer, and until the separation, they both lived on the acreage next to Highway 92 and near the city of Farwell. She, since that time, has remained in the acreage and has taken care of that. Basically, in this decision, the district court said that we are looking at the evidence and looking at the decision in Tierney versus Tierney as a reason to give this acreage to to Randy at this time. And we're saying that decision is not based on the evidence. There is no evidence that Mr. Kauk needed that or that would interfere with this operation. The only evidence, and the judge used that and on page 5 of her decision, the evidence that was given to her was from the closing argument by the defendant, was not part of the record.
Is that evidence?
I don't believe it is evidence, Your Honor.
Okay. So there's no evidence, that's your argument.
That's my argument, is there's no evidence to support the rationale that she used. Even if she did, she was relying on the Tierney case. The Tierney case actually was a case where she was the district judge, and the case was reversed. But it was reversed as to the parcel, not as to the portion that had the home on it. So the spouse in that case actually did still receive the home. So her
in this record, do we have a legal description of the actual 7-acre tract?
It probably be the 7-acre tract. If the best legal description would be on Exhibit 44, which would be the property statement.
But that's when that describes a 40-acre. It's southeast quarter of the southeast quarter of whatever section number that
Well,
is.
There is a 40.
And then it says in parentheses 7 acres. So how do we get from 40 acres to 7 acres?
Well, the 40 acres, if you know, there is a separate 40-acre parcel, there's a separate 160-acre parcel, and then there is another separate parcel that has the 7 acres with the house located on there.
And we don't have a legal description for that anywhere in the record, do we?
Well, you know, I'm not sure that we do. We know that portion of the 7 acres is actually part of the cow quarter that was an issue later on. It is part of that south.
It's a
portion of 31.
I think there's evidence in the record that it was a corner of an irrigation system. But in terms of where the corner goes, what angles it follows, we don't have a meets and bounds.
We don't have meets and bounds. We do have a location, which is right next to Highway 92 across from the city of Farwell. So it's.
But we don't know where the center pivot sits. So even if we were going to say 7 acres in that corner, we don't have any way to locate where the the curved portion of the description would be, do we?
Well, there is a separate deed for that parcel because that's where they put their land on.
And that's not in our record, is it?
It may not be, and certainly it's available, you know.
Okay, so let's assume for the moment we're past the legal description. Is it clear in the record what she was asking? Was she asking for the whole 7 acres or was she asking for the house?
I think she was asking for the 7 acres that had the house on it.
And what evidence was there of her use of anything but the house?
The evidence of her use of the outside portion of the house is that she mowed the lawn, she kept the flowers up, she had a bunch of landscaping that it was necessary and available in that area. Other than the rest of the acreage, no evidence with regard to that.
Thank you. And we don't know how big the lawn was.
I think from the record we do. It said she testified it took her 4 hours to mow it, so it was obviously a pretty substantial lawn.
So there's nothing in the record of how many acres per hour she could mow, right?
No, you're so true, Your Honor.
We can't calculate exactly what she was asking for if she was asking for something less than the entire 7 acre tract.
Correct. I mean, we'd asked for the 7 acre tract and listed it on the schedule. That was the valuation that was agreed upon, was for the 7 acre tract in the exhibit 44.
Okay. Thank you. Is there evidence that surrounding the house were outbuildings or machinery or anything like that?
There is no evidence that I was able to determine from the record that indicates that. As we say, the only evidence that the court found came from the closing statement, written closing statement that was submitted in this case. Even
which
so,
which are not in the record.
What's that?
Which are not in the record.
Correct. And I believe that, you know, the cases of Tierney and Tierney cites to Snow, they are cited there for the reason that we're looking at a choice of parcels in both those cases. They're fairly large ranches and had substantial property in both of them. In the Snow case, they said, why would you give one parcel of real estate that's not adjacent to the rest of that property to the non-ranching spouse? You should do it in a manner that's convenient and better, it makes a better economic unit. In the instance of Tierney, besides the fact that they did find that there was a parcel that had some of the cattle equipment on it, they also said this parcel is also located in the middle of all of the other property that he has, so it was much more accessible for his cattle to be able to pasture and be fed. So I think a lot of those issues, otherwise, if we say every time that we have a farming situation that farming spouse should get the house just because they need it, is going to arrive at a situation where that will always be the case because they will be able to use a precedent such as this to go ahead and say, hey, I can't. The judge, I think, felt when she looked, and you look at her decision, that she had no choice based on Tierney to be able to go ahead and give that to Randy in this instance.
Before your time expires, do you want to address the other two issues?
If I could, Your Honor, just briefly, the issue with regard to the debts, we believe one of the issues with regard to the court claimed it was rent. It was not rent. It was for a payment made on a farm. It's called the Jorgensen Farm that they purchased. If you look through the record in the balance sheets, it actually shows that the bank said, we refinance this to pay off the balloon payment on this Jorgensen place. So that's clear. The others were basically payments that were made sometimes 5 years after the party separate, 5 months after the party separated, that talk about different things that they claim were still part of the year before type debts. And we think the burden should be on the person who pays those or who incurs those or who whose benefit that was for to prove that issue. The final issue with regard to the Basically, it was an attempted purchase, never signed contracts, but it was family for a quarter that was owned by the Kaup Family LLC. We have substantial evidence in the record that talks about the payments that were actually made towards this, even though no contracts were signed. Payments that were made, that a letter from the attorney that verified how much pay, how much that reflected in the new contract, the payments that were previously made. They show we have.
But that didn't get signed either.
That did not get signed, but that's not surprising. They still treated it as if it was signed and the payments were still made. Even if you look as far as a few months before the actual separation of the parties, there was a check that says this is a payment of Randy's buyout. And that those checks actually were provided by Randy's sister in response to him asking her to say that they had always paid the taxes on it. Clearly there was marital assets that were spent. You know, I think there's some case law that says, like Bergmeier, that says, even though we're not sure what will happen here, there's value to this and that, and the other spouse should always been able to receive that value if it's available. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. McDermott, good morning to you.
Good morning, Mr. Chief Justice, members of the Supreme Court. May it please the court, my name is John McDermott. I represent Randy Kaup, who's also present this morning. As Mr. Urich indicated, this is a Howard County District Court case that was heard by Judge Noakes. One of the allegations of error in this case is the finding by Judge Noakes that the family home should be quieted in Randy Kaup because Judge Noakes determined that the case of Tierney versus Tierney required that the court to award the house to Randy. And I submit to you that is not what the court said in its order in this case. And I submit to you that that's a misrepresentation of what the judge found. In this case, the court understood Mrs. Kaup's affinity and attachment to the home as she had remodeled it. She loves cooking cookies in the kitchen.
What evidence was there in the record of your client's use of any portion of that 7-acre tract?
Judge, I'm not sure that there's a whole lot of evidence in the record on that, but I will submit to you that there were many, many pre-trial conferences, there were many progression hearings, there was mediation. In fact, it was stipulated that prior to the trial that both parties were asking the court to award that home to them. It's also obvious. I mean, I don't know that it's obvious in the record, but it's obvious when you live out in this neck of the woods, if you have a 7-acre tract and you're a farmer, where else are you putting your machinery? So to be honest with you, I don't know that there's a whole lot in there. I think it's probably just understood that Randy's wanting it because that's where he farms. That's where he's at. So I understood.
He didn't even testify to that, did he?
I don't think he probably did, Judge.
Okay.
I mean, I'm being honest. I don't think he probably did, but I think, quite frankly, everybody understood that that's why he was wanting the place. We understood why she wanted. We understood why he wanted it. You know, it was probably bad lawyering on my part, but the fact of the matter is that everybody understood and knew that that's what the parties were arguing. All the other issues, many of the other issues, except 4 or 5, were resolved. It was interesting also, Judge, that in this case, when one of the issues was the value of the farm machinery and who was going to get the farm machinery, and how this ordinarily works in that area is you put a property statement together and you put a value on the property and then the other party puts a property on the value. And if the values are extrinsically far apart, then you get to say you can have it. So if you think the car is worth $20,000 and we think it's worth $10,000, you get the car at $20,000. Congratulations. Well, we did the same thing on the farm machinery equipment, which is also one of the sources in this case. And their value, they had an expert who valued these pieces of equipment at $62,000 higher than our value. Now, Randy's been farming a long time. He uses a lot of old equipment, a lot of used equipment. He's a pretty good mechanic, tries to keep it going. But the $62,000 was significant. The trial court took the value of the appraiser and put it in at $62,000, which is higher than what we wanted to take it at. And the court said, Marsh is not farming. It wouldn't be fair to give her that equipment because Randy is wanting to have the house. That's where he farms. I know that that's where he farms. That's where he keeps his equipment. So it'd be unfair for her to have the equipment at the 60, at the lower price that Randy gave or wanted to give it to her.
Just to be clear, There's no evidence in the record where he keeps his equipment.
That's there. I think that's correct, Judge. And again, I think we just assumed everybody understood and knew that. And I agree with you. It's not other, but we had many progression hearings and the court.
We're supposed to, is this like judicial notice that if you live there, that's where you keep your equipment? Because, you know, I'm not from that part of the world. And it wasn't universally true that farmers and ranchers always kept their equipment at the same location.
I would agree it's not universal. I agree that it's not universally true.
So how do we know that that was the case?
Well, it was argued to the court. The court was aware of it. It was.
But those arguments, even the arguments aren't in our record.
I understand that. But all I'm saying is that at some point, obviousness has to be, everybody has to understand the obviousness of the situation. I mean, it was obvious at this point that both the parties wanted that track, and there was reasons for that. And those had been expressed to the court, obviously not on the record, but the court understood and knew them.
So what is, maybe I ought to ask a more basic question. What is the purpose of a record in an appeal?
It's so that you can review what the parties put on the record, what was evidence was before the court.
And without that, what do we do?
Well, you review the record and see what it shows, right?
Would it be an abuse of discretion by the judge to give Andy House if there was no evidence that there was machinery or outbuildings around the house?
Judge, I don't think this is any different than if it's a car. Let's just say that there's a car to divide. The parties are arguing over a car. One says, I want the car because we got that when we were first married. Dylan says, well, I want the car, but he doesn't give a reason for it. The court can still divide that car and award that car to one party or the other without a reason, right? Because we're dividing property. And that's exactly what the court is doing here. The court is aware that Randy is a farmer. The court is aware that he farms right next to this. The court is aware that the 7-acre tract is right next to the parcel that he farms. So all we're doing is dividing property. So is it an abuse of discretion if the court gives the car to the other party, even though they didn't say why they want the car? And I say it's not. That's not abuse of discretion. The court had a very clear understanding of what the court perceived the issues were in this case and what the issues actually were. The court was the same court that had determined the Tierney case, And the court was aware, and if you look at the judge's decree in this case, she said, I'm aware of the facts and the considerations in the Tierney case and taking that into consideration.
What is the status of the Tierney case? How binding is that? Has this court said anything similar kinds of
this court cases? Determined the Tierney case about 6 or 8 months ago.
Well, that's Tierney 2.
Tierney 2, yes.
They're relying.
Yes, Tierney 2.
They're relying on Tierney 1, or the trial court judge was relying on Tierney 1.
Well, probably. I'm trying to think of the time frame. I that's a great question. I just don't remember the time frame.
And Tierney 1 was the Court of Appeals. Is that
Tierney 1 was the Court of Appeals, and Tierney 2, apologize, Judge. I realize it's distinct between 1 and 2, but there is a distinction between 1 and 2. But the court was aware. In this case, the court said it was aware of what happened in the Tierney case, and it had gotten reversed. So the court had considered all of the things that were taken into consideration in the Tierney 1. So I want to get just briefly, if I can, to the issue of the payments made by Mr. Kopp to his family, LLC. The district court rightly determined that there was no contract, there's no purchase agreement. There was no oral contract, there was no written contract. There was an attempt to agree. Mr. Tierney has essentially paid rent. He's behind in his rent. He was behind in his rent at the time that we tried the case. He was always paying in arrears, which is why the court determined that with respect to some of those bills, he was paying in arrears. It was 219, but he still had to pay for the 2018 bills. And so the court was aware of that. So I just wanted to make sure that I hit the point about the Kopp family LLC. The court was absolutely correct on that. With respect to the bills, again, the court was aware of, and Marcia testified, Randy was terrible at paying bills. He was always behind in paying bills. And so I think that there was sufficient in the record for the court to make that determination.
If I may, with respect to payments, was Randy in debt, quote unquote, for arrearages on the payments, and who absorbs that in the property division?
Randy, are you talking about the real estate? Are you talking about the debts on the fuel and so forth?
No, actually, I was talking about the real estate.
Well, if we're talking about the Calc LLC, Randy was always way behind on that and never made the full payment in 16, only paid a partial payment in 17, was in default by 18. And at the time that we tried this case in 19, he was still behind on the 18. So I think his sister testified that he was in default and they had defaulted him and basically was at that point just paying rent.
So there was a default of a oral contract to purchase the property?
Well, he's just saying he never did it. She said there was a default of paying. What he agreed to pay, he just never paid it.
Well, your argument is there was no contract.
There is no contract.
But I don't know how you're in default of a contract.
Well, that's what she testified to, Judge.
Okay.
So, does that have any further questions? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal. That concludes arguments on Calc versus Calc. And that concludes arguments for today. Council, you are excused and the court is adjourned.